being. Your silence is commanded.
Please be seated. We're delighted to welcome students for this argument, which, as you know, is running a bit late. I want to first welcome Pius Ninth High School. Would the students please stand? And Matthew Byers attended the Teachers Institute in 2006. Thank you for bringing your class back. You may be seated. And we have Gibraltar High School. Those students would stand, please. And thank you all for coming. You may be seated. The students are here with a program called Caught with Class. It's a program that has won national awards and is sponsored by this court and by the State Bar of Wisconsin. The students are invited to come, and if they accept the invitation, they are sent briefs in the case we're about to hear, and they may engage in other activities relating to the case. They come for oral argument, and then after the second oral argument, the students meet with a justice of this court to discuss the procedures of the court, not the substantive issues of the case we are about to hear. If anyone would like a summary of this case so that they can read it and understand it better, if you'd raise your hand, the marshal will give you a summary. While the marshal is handing that out, let me introduce the court to you. On my right is Justice John Wilcox, and Justice Wilcox will meet with you at about 12:30, because we're going to hear half the case and then the other half after lunch. Seated next to Justice Wilcox is Justice Patrick Crooks, and seated next to Justice Crooks on the far right is Justice Patience Robinsack. On my far left is Justice Lewis Butler. Seated next to him is Justice David Prosser. To my immediate left is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley, and I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. With those introductions made, I'm going to call our second case. I've discussed this with counsel, and we are going to hear the attorney for Nicole W., Assistant State Public Defender Martha K. Askins. And when she is finished, we are going to take a lunch break and return at 1:30, and then we're going to hear the Oneida County Department of Social Services and the guardian ad litem, and then Ms. Askins gets 5 minutes in rebuttal, and we will then have our third case for the day. Ms. Askins.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Martha Askins. I represent the mother in this case, Nicole W. I'd like to begin with just a brief statement of the facts. Nicole gave birth to Brianka on October 21st of 2003. Brianka was born prematurely. She had some medical issues, and so she did not go home with Nicole. She stayed in the hospital, and on October 29th, she was placed in a foster home. A CHIPS petition was then filed on November 11th of 2003. As the court saw from the court record, from the TPR report, a visitation order was issued. And Nicole, through social services, had visits with Brianka, and there were other various interventions. This went on until March 11, 2005, when the county filed a petition to terminate Nicole's parental rights to Brianka. Now, rather than take the case to trial, on May 24, 2005, the county filed a motion for partial summary judgment. The county asked the court to enter an order finding grounds to terminate Nicole's parental rights to Brianka based on 48.415 sub 10. And that ground is prior involuntary termination of parental rights to another child. Now, there are two elements to that statutory ground for termination. And I have set forth the statute in my brief at page 8. First, the current child, so Bianca, must be subject to a CHIPS petition, and that is not at issue in this case. It is the second part of that statute, and that is that within the prior 3 years, a court has ordered the termination of parental rights with respect to another child of the person whose parental rights are sought to be terminated on one or more of the grounds specified in this section. Now, the county asked the court, again, now we're back up in Oneida County, to take judicial notice that Bianca had been the subject of a CHIPS petition. And the county attached to its motion for partial summary judgment a copy of an order entered in Waukesha County which purported to show that Nicole had had her parental rights to her little boy, Rocky, terminated. Judge Kinney in Oneida County held a hearing on the motion, and counsel for Nicole objected, saying the county had not met its burden and there was no proof of prior termination on grounds. So Judge Kinney said that he was also concerned because the order appeared to be incomplete. He said, and I quote, "We don't know from this order what the grounds were," close quote. The judge continued the hearing to allow the county to get the rest of the file, saying, "Let's find out what the petition alleged and perhaps obtain a transcript of the proceedings at which the default order was entered." He also suggested that the county might try to get the Waukesha County Court to enter an amended order to correct the apparent problem with the order. The parties reconvened a few weeks later. The county presented only the termination petition. So the record before the court was the termination petition from Waukesha County plus the incomplete order from Waukesha County. The county did not introduce a corrected order from Waukesha, nor did it produce a transcript of what occurred in the Waukesha proceeding. Nevertheless, Judge Kinney found that the petition plus the default order supported the motion for partial summary judgment and, in fact, granted the county's motion for partial summary judgment. What I'm asking this court to do is reverse the circuit court's conclusion that the county was entitled to partial summary judgment in this case. The prior order simply does not show that the termination of Nicole's parental rights to Rocky was based on grounds. Instead, it shows only that her parental rights were terminated based on default. The order from Waukesha County, which is included in the appendix in my brief, is lacking in two critical respects. Line 6 of the order fails to show that the matter was tried to either the court or the jury. We do not know from that order, and in fact, I would argue that the only inference that can be drawn from that order is that, in fact, there was no fact-finding hearing to either a court or the jury.
Now, why is that, counsel? Isn't the standard basically that judgments of another court carry certain presumption of validity? And so by using that, and you're saying, well, we don't know, therefore you can't use it, and therefore, that's kind of working backwards. There's a presumption of validity for that judgment, that it was done appropriately. No one ever challenged it, as I understand. If I'm wrong, you just let me know. There was no challenge, there was no appearance, there was no argument about it at all.
We don't know what happened in Waukesha. If Your Honor is referring to there was no objection in Waukesha. Yes, we don't know what happened. We don't know if, for example, Nicole had been ordered to appear and did not appear. We don't know if, I don't believe, if counsel was there for her. So what I would suggest is, getting to your question, is, sure, generally speaking, there is a presumption of validity of a court order, and that should be given respect in a subsequent court proceeding. However, there are really three things at work here that I think make a difference. Number one, we're talking about a summary judgment motion. We're not talking about a trial to the jury on facts. The county is trying to avoid a trial on the facts, and if they seek to avoid a trial on the facts, then there can't be any competing inferences to be drawn. And I would argue that because this record is incomplete, it does lead to competing reasonable inferences. Now, had the order been complete, had it been flawless, then perhaps the burden would have shifted to the mother to say, wait a second, you can't rely on this because, for example, the default was subsequently reopened, because, of course, that is something that can happen in the default. Now, the other thing that I would suggest is that I'm concerned about this order in the context of a termination of parental rights case. We all know that these cases are held to a high standard because both permanency for the child is critically important and permanency of the parental right is, or the importance of the parental right is so great. So what I would suggest, Your Honor, is that we not be looking for how many things could be missing from this form and still have it be appropriate. Would it be enough if it simply had Judge Becker's signature on the order? And I would assert that the answer would have to be no, that particularly in a summary judgment posture, the court has to be able to say there's only one inference that can be drawn from this record. And I argue that more than one inference can be drawn from this record.
Counsel, if I could follow up on Justice Wilcox's question, and I'm always concerned with the practicalities of the case and what can happen. In this action, Judge Kinney had already kind of signaled that there was a problem here. And I understand that your client has a right to stand on her rights and have the county meet its burden of proof. But given the problems that have already been signaled by the order itself, why not just go ahead from the defense perspective, order a copy of the transcript, and show Judge Kinney that, hey, this just didn't happen here, if in fact that's what a transcript would have shown? That would certainly deal with Justice Wilcox's concern that it gets under that presumption of validity of the order.
I think probably the reason trial counsel didn't do that was trial counsel was taking a position that, in fact, a default order, which this is not a finding of grounds. And I think what his position was, I don't care what the transcript says. This was a default order in a termination of parental rights case, looking at the statute. It says the prior termination has to be on grounds, and I'm going to take the legislature at its word. Grounds isn't default, and so I think that's probably, or it could be a reason why a transcript was not produced. And the other thing is basically it is the county's burden.
I'm going to have the same problem for opposing counsel, but it just seems to me that given the signal that the judge sent out here that it would behoove somebody to bring a transcript of those proceedings in to establish what had occurred in Waukesha County. And whether it was the county or whether it was the defense, it seems to be, for lack of a better word, a shame, given the fact that we're dealing with a young child here, that nobody took the time, particularly given the signal of this judge, nobody took the time to come in and say, look, this is what happened down in Waukesha. This is why we're dealing with it this way here.
Well, I think that the proper response really had to be that you, the petitioner, you, the moving party, have not convinced me we're going to trial. And we're going to have this to a jury, and the jury's going to decide whether there's continuing CHIPS and whether there has been a prior termination based on grounds.
Counsel, but there's never been an argument made that she was denied counsel at Rocky's termination, correct?
Only that we don't know what happened at Rocky's.
Well, you have her as your client.
I have not alleged a collateral attack on the prior order based on either lack of counsel or anything else.
Okay, that's what I need to know.
That's clear.
Thank you very much.
My argument is a quite narrow one, and that is that particularly because we're in the context of summary judgment, there's just too much we don't know that in a case of this grave importance, the county simply didn't meet its burden of proof.
This is an evidentiary issue as far as you're concerned. If they had brought in an order that showed the ground upon which the court found termination and a transcript showing that there was evidence presented that she was represented or was not represented, did or didn't appear by telephone or whatever, and this was all done, and then the court held that the two grounds, or one of the two grounds, was proven, you wouldn't be here? Is that your point?
Well, they're not exactly.
Okay.
There are really two issues. The first being that where the prior termination is by default, period, then that may not serve as the basis for the subsequent termination because the statute says it has to be on grounds. Now, stepping back from that, I would say that where a petitioner and a moving party presents evidence to show that not only was it a default, but the court properly took evidence at a fact-finding hearing and found grounds,
right,
it's more difficult for me to maintain that absolute position.
When you say more difficult, can you maintain it at all?
Probably not reasonably.
Okay, that's what I meant in my question to you, that every base had been touched.
Mm-hmm.
Mother wasn't there. Wasn't represented by counsel, or even if she was, given the opportunity but didn't take it. State produced evidence, or the county did, and then the judge made a finding that by clear and convincing evidence, I find that.
Then, and if all that record was presented, in this case to Judge Kinney, it's possible that I wouldn't have a claim that I could make to this court.
Well, right now we don't know that, and I guess my point, or at least we know that grounds have to be proven by clear, clear and convincing evidence. I'm talking about the grounds phase, and since I have some recollection of the Evelyn case, I'm just saying that. So there's the presumption here is that the presumption is that Waukesha did it correctly.
Well,
and you can have a default, and it says on the grounds part of it, you have to have clear and convincing evidence, so she wasn't there, and they presented the grounds, and I think that's what I can't read what Judge Kinney did, but it seems to me, ultimately, that's what he decided.
Well, let me explain why I'm concerned about that. And it's really the context of the termination of parental rights cases. I'm obviously familiar with Evelyn as well. We know that a default judgment may be entered in a TPR case, and we know from that case that the court is supposed to have a fact-finding hearing. I am not convinced that that particular message has made it to all of the circuit courts around the state who handle the TPR cases. And the reason that I say that is really anecdotal, and that is that I listen to the argument in Shirley E. that this court had just a couple of weeks ago. And what I gathered from the oral argument in that case was that a default judgment was entered before evidence had been received, sort of like Evelyn C.R. And I am concerned, I mean, as this court has said many times, with a termination of parental rights case, we want to make sure we get it right. We want to reduce the possibility of erroneous decisions. And I am concerned that where we don't know what happened, this is the kind of case where we need to say we can't assume everything was done properly because our experience shows otherwise. Now, that, I think, is sort of the backdrop of this case, is until the court is convinced that a county, whatever, whoever the petitioner is, has done everything right, that this court shouldn't be, and we as litigants should not be looking for how we can lower the bar as low as possible and still make it good enough. That this is an area where we don't want to encourage shortcuts.
Well, Ms. Askins, why shouldn't we send this back and say to the trial court, bring up the transcript?
If this court rules in favor of Nicole W., what it means is that the summary judgment order is vacated and we're back to that posture. So the parties could present the transcript. The parties could go to trial. I mean, this is, the posture of this, again, is different from one where there has actually been a trial on the merits. So, yes, that could happen.
Could I ask, what are the implications of your position for Rocky?
None. Because I am not attacking the order regarding Rocky. And I want to be clear on this because I think the Court of Appeals decision made it look like I was trying to undermine the order involving Rocky. I am not. What I am saying is if the county wants to rely on what happened in Rocky's case, they need to prove that to Judge Kinney. Okay? And they need to show that Nicole W. had her rights to Rocky terminated on grounds. Now, if, let's say, they can't do that. Let's say we get a transcript and it was, you know, no procedures were followed, you know, and there was no hearing and let's assume the worst, okay? Then what would happen is it would go back still to Judge Kinney's court for fact-finding.
In this case,
in Brianka, not Rocky, but in Brianka, and what would happen is the county would either prove or attempt to prove one of the other grounds that alleged, like continuing chips for Brianka, or they would bring in some other evidence to show, if there was any, that there were grounds. So it's not going to undo what happened in Rocky's case.
Why can't someone use that in Rocky's case? What's going to stop some other lawyer, perhaps not you, from going back and undoing Rocky's TPR if the court didn't follow our directives in Evelyn?
Well, is there a presumption of finality in the statutes?
Well, there's certainly, there's always a presumption of finality. I don't know that there's a presumption of finality that's particular in the context of the TPR, but I would think that estoppel would be enough. I mean, the fact that there hadn't been an appeal in Rocky's case.
We've had cases where there haven't been appeals.
Well,
I'm sure you're familiar.
Yeah, I'm aware that we have other cases where there are collateral attacks on prior, but typically, for example, in, say, the traffic incidents where a subsequent attorney says, My client didn't have counsel for OWI number 2, so you can't count that one, so this is really number 4. But that doesn't really undo number 2, it seems to me.
Also, but this is different, and just think about, I'm just thinking about the impact is that 3 years ago, there was a termination of parental rights. Rocky, most likely, I have no idea, has been, his life has been changed. And if you're going to make that unsettled and there's no finality, I think that this is something that this court has to think about, because there, you have all these presumptions, and now you're saying because you don't like defaults, we don't like them either. They're frowned upon, but if certain requirements are met, particularly if in these cases where we have to look at the grounds, and then the second part is the best interest of the child, it raises some real concerns.
Well, I understand that. I mean, I'm not interested in disrupting Rocky's situation or any other child in the future like him. What I am saying, though, is if the, I mean, I have to put the responsibility back on the county here as well, because the county has to meet its burden to sever the parental-child relationship. Well, the county has to prove it in Oneida County. And if it wants to rely on a prior termination, which is only one of many grounds, it better make sure that it was on grounds. And if it wasn't, then it should seek to terminate based on one of these other grounds. Now, I would offer the reverse. Say that there is a young woman who has a baby, completely unequipped to deal with that child. That child is involuntarily terminated. 3 years later, she is on the right track, or at least getting there. How easy should it be for the county to terminate her parental rights for the subsequent child? I mean, sure, under this statute, she would be, her child would be subject to a CHIPS petition. But 3 years earlier, her parental rights to another child had been terminated.
Counselor, has Nicole ever had custody of Bianca?
No, as you can see from my recitation of the facts.
How old now? 3+?
3. And my understanding is that she has been in the same foster care for this, for the duration.
Thank you.
Is this subsection 10, well, is it constitutional?
I think it is in this case. Could there be a situation where it's unconstitutional? Perhaps. I started to think about that in the context of going back over all of the termination of parental rights cases. This one concerns me because, you know, as the court's aware, I do criminal cases, and this sounds like witty evidence to me. You know, it sounds like other acts that comes in. And so it concerns me that, or proof of consent that, geez, I might be able to parent this child, whereas 3 years earlier I couldn't parent another child. So that troubles me, but I'm not arguing in this case that the statute is unconstitutional.
Either on its face or as applied?
Correct. Thank you. My red light is on.
Thank you, Ms. Askins. We are going to hear from Mr. Winch and Ms. Stuber at 1:30. And then Ms. Askins, and then we'll take the third case. The students who wish to and can remain should stay in the courtroom, and everyone else is also cordially invited to stay. And Justice Wilcox will be out momentarily to talk to you about the court's procedures. We're in recess until 1:30.